From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The ticking stopwatch still comes every Sunday night, and right behind the familiar voice announcing, I'm Mike Wallace. For 37 years, CBS newsman Mike Wallace has interviewed the great and the grand, con men and killers for 60 Minutes. And that's just his best-known job in a long broadcasting career. He's taken on Malcolm X and Ayatollah Khomeini, Eleanor Roosevelt and Jose Canseco, fame, fortune, and withering clinical depression. Now Wallace is 87. He is still remarkably cranking out his trademark tough interviews for 60 Minutes. But he's also looking back on a career like few others. Up next on Point, 60 Minutes newsman Mike Wallace on a life in the news. Joining me now in the studio is Mike Wallace. His new memoir is Between You and Me. Mike Wallace, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thank you. First question to you, though, Tom.
Oh, boy.
Raised on an Illinois farm and attended Yale University. What was a farmer doing in New Haven going to Yale?
Hey, it's America. Everybody looks up, out, and around. You did the same thing, and I won't let you turn the tables on me, Mr. Interviewer.
And worked as a supervisor and dynamiter in Alaska's oil fields.
Surveyor.
So, oh, that's right.
Right. I've got to get a bit in your teeth, Mike Wallace, or you'll take this away. I know you're the interviewer,
absolutely,
but we've got to turn the tables on you.
All right.
You grew up just, a matter of blocks from this studio
that's
in Brookline,
correct.
Massachusetts. You became the most tenacious interviewer at that level on television, I would say, at that tip-top level, with a reputation that you were even called Mike Malice when you first came out. People saw it as so ferocious. Were you like this from the get-go? Where did you get this get-your-teeth-in and don't-give-up character?
You know something, really, Tom? First of all, I just wanted to be a radio announcer. That's all I thought about. And then, spending some time in the Navy in the Second World War, mm-hmm. I figured, hey, I don't want to just read commercials and rip and read news and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the demeanor as an anchor. So let's see what kind of a job can I carve out of a reporter's job? I was a nosy kid here in Brookline mm-hmm. back then.
Went to Edward Devotion School, same school JFK went to.
Jack only went there for about 3 years.
Yeah,
and incidentally, please ask me about Robert Kraft, the guy who owns
the New England Patriots.
That's exactly right.
What shall I ask you? What shall we ask you about Robert Kraft?
Well, he says that he went to Edward Devotion School.
Yes.
And Jack Kennedy went to, and Myron Wallace, which was
as in Mike.
Yeah. And that he had he told me that there were pictures of the three of us, three famous graduates of
JFK, Robert Kraft, and Myron Mike Wallace.
That is correct.
On the wall at Edward Devotion School.
So I went back to the Edward Devotion School yesterday for the first time in, a quarter century or more.
What a journey.
And there are no pictures of no one any place. It was all...
What, he's bluffing you?
I have no idea why he bothered.
He's making a fake call from the sidelines.
That
he's got Mike
exactly
Wallace going.
Right. I haven't talked to him about it yet. I mean, come on. Why does he...
Your parents were immigrants?
Immigrants from Russia.
Jewish immigrants from the shtetl, as you write
mm-hmm.
In the book. Did they raise tough kids? Did they raise kids? I mean, you were a violinist, I think, in high school. But were you aggressive? Were you in the face of the teachers, of your principal, of your colleagues, the same way?
Not especially. No, I work with a guy by the name of Ted Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Yates, to whose widow I am now married. Mm-hmm. And have been for about the last 20, 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was a wonderful producer, reporter, et cetera, et cetera. He died on the first day of the Six-Day War because he was, by that time, he was a correspondent for NBC as well as a producer
mm-hmm.
and a brave, brave man. In any case, Ted, we did the first half-hour news show in New York City.
This is way before 60 Minutes, 1956, a show called Night Beat.
You're right. The first half hour was news,
mm-hmm.
and then the second half hour and Beyond was an interview show, and that's the first time that I began to understand that there is, I love to do research and write the questions down, and when I'm talking to somebody, and the interviewee, the object of my presumed scrutiny, suddenly realizes that I, as an interviewer, have done a lot of work.
You're on to them.
Exactly right. And our eyes meet, and that chemistry of confidentiality develops, and we become, in a sense, co-conspirators. I mean, you and I are looking at each other through our glasses
right now.
Yeah. And I'm beginning to know who you are.
And it's
if you
a kind
know
of
me.
Tractor beam that you get on them.
That's exactly
Once
right.
Once they know that you've got the details. I want to begin, throughout this hour, I really want to hear you at work over the years, if we may. I want to begin to tiptoe back into some of these. This is not a particularly confrontational interview, but a very significant and interesting one. I want to go to you speaking with Martin Luther King, Jr., 1966. This is a time when there was a growing call for violence in the civil rights cause, which he rejected wholly. Let's listen.
I will never change in my basic idea that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom and justice. I think for the Negro to turn to violence would be both impractical and immoral.
There is an increasingly vocal minority who disagreed totally with your tactics, Dr. King.
There's no doubt about that. I will agree that there is a group in the Negro community advocating violence now. The vast majority of Negroes still feel that the best way to deal with the dilemma that we face in this country is through nonviolent resistance.
Martin Luther King speaking with interviewer Mike Wallace. There.
Martin Luther King out of BU.
Out of BU, no less, of course. That's right, Boston University.
Yeah.
You've stayed curious and you've stayed tough, but you do have at least one hero, and you say it's Martin Luther King, Jr. Many people might name him, but why do you in particular, Mike Wallace?
Well, I name him the man, the indispensable man, and the man I most admire because he was dead honest. We had a lot of talk recently about Rosa Parks,
yes,
brave, wonderful woman, but it was Martin Luther King, truly, who made sure that that bus boycott that started after she moved her chair, not to the back of the bus, but she was going to. It was he, and this was his first parish, first job. In any case, Lyndon Johnson, as a Southern politician, astonished me because what he did was he tried to bring the races together.
As a Southerner.
That's exactly right. And so Martin Luther King, as a result, of course, was grateful.
But still not afraid to criticize Johnson on the war.
That's the point. He took on, in effect, his patron, and he said, it's the wrong war, wrong time, wrong place, Vietnam. And can you imagine taking on the guy who did so much to bring the races together in this country?
I can imagine, we know that he did that. I can also imagine Mike Wallace taking on, perhaps not a patron, but a power. Martin Luther King, Jr., your hero, was a crusader, a campaigner for social justice. Do you see Mike Wallace in the same mold? Has Mike Wallace been a crusader for something?
No, I'm not a crusader for anything except, if you will, for truth. Out of the mouths of reporters and in newspapers and in, you know what I'm saying. Truth, accuracy, fairness, but as far as a
social agenda?
No, none.
Mike, let me ask you about the television business. Your time in it was a time when all the attention was focused really on the three big networks. And within those networks, on a stable of stars, you very high among them, who were the focus of the entire country.
Exactly.
That meant a lot of things. It meant tremendous fame. It meant fortune. This was not $20 a week at WOOD. And it put you in a position that, where you had power, you had clout that often would equal that of the very powerful people you were interviewing in some respect.
You're building me up more than I deserve to be built up.
Well, they met with you because you had the audience of such great size. You had leverage.
By the time 60 Minutes came along.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the 6:30 news mm-hmm. that really had the power. Walter Cronkite, Huntley Brinkley, Howard K. Smith, Harry Reasoner when he took over. The country listened at 6:30 at night. That's not there anymore.
What does it mean for accountability in our government, in our halls of power today, when there is no leverage like that, when the news eye is diffuse, when you don't have quite the same giants who can stride in and demand the interview and put the tough questions?
Well, try to demand an interview with anybody in the White House today. Do you know something? I have interviewed every president in the United States, it seems, since Abe Lincoln. And Marlene Schaffer says every first lady since Martha Washington.
Yep.
Except George W. Bush. I've never even met the man. Why? Karl Rove said, you're not going to talk. When he was governor of Texas, and I was doing a story down there about tort reform, one thing and another, and judges that got caught up. They were elected judges down there in the Supreme Court. And there was a conflict of interest, obviously, from people who had contributed to their campaigns. Well,
tough questions. They didn't like it. And you don't get another bite of the apple.
That's exactly right.
If you could interview President Bush today, Mike Wallace, I know you haven't written out your list of 60 or 70 questions, but what would you ask him?
First question. And I thought about it because I was watching him as I was coming over here to talk to you.
The speech at Annapolis.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. What in the world, sir, Mr. President, prepared you, what in your background, prepared you to be the commander-in-chief of the supreme power in the world? Your military background? No. Your business background? No. Your travel? You were an incurious man for such a long time. I'm at a loss to understand. And you were, according to Bob Woodward in his book, Plan of Attack, you said when asked if you ever talked to your dad, George H.W. Bush, number 41, about what you might do better or different. No, you said, according to Bob Woodward. No, I look to a higher father. Give me a break.
Ooh, the Mike Wallace opening line for President George W. Bush. The last line of your book is, so how about it, Mr. President? Isn't it time you gave this old man a break? If Karl Rove is listening, Mike, if that's the question, I don't think the White House door is open quite yet.
I think you're probably right.
Mike Wallace, it's been an incredible career. We're very grateful for your time today, for the book. We thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.